Today my visitor is Sister Pauline Engel. Sister Pauline, a warm welcome and hi to our radio program.
Hi, bye.
Sister Pauline is a sister of mercy and has been teaching three generations of girls and young women. She taught mainly history and religious education, but also English and geography at all three Mercy Colleges in Auckland, Macaulay, St. Mary's and Carmel. While working as a teacher at school, Sister Pauline wrote her master thesis on the topic, the abolition of capital punishment in New Zealand. And this was then published by the Department of Justice. Before Sister Pauline joined the Sisters of Mercy, she worked in the public service in Wellington for 10 years. She was deputy principal at Macaulay College for 1 year, when she was then asked to teach at the seminary, which was at that time in Mosgiel, Dunedin, in 1980. She worked at Zealandia, today's New Zealand Catholic, and when she was appointed principal of Carmel College, she held that position for 8 years. In 1986, Sister Pauline was awarded the CBE, Commander of the British Empire, for her services to education. Then, in 1995, she was named a Dame Commander of the Order of the British Empire in the Queen's Birthday Honours. At the age of 64, Sister Pauline was appointed Vicar for Education in the Catholic Diocese of Auckland. She was the first woman in this position and held it for almost 10 years. And during her whole career, Sister Pauline has been focusing on the education of mercy, teaching young women to grow and making people think for themselves. Is that all correct? Long history.
Yes.
And you are a Wellingtonian, Sister Pauline, and you've been working in the public service for many years. What made you leave Wellington and your job there and come to Auckland, become a Sister of Mercy?
It's a complex kind of answer because there wasn't really one reason, but the one that I probably think is most acceptable would be that leaving Wellington, where my whole family, we've got their sixth generation there in that little village where my father was born, and I think I was very unsure that I would last the distance if I entered the convent in Wellington, which was so close to where I worked in the government buildings for 10 years. And I felt that moving away, I might have a better chance of lasting. Also, I had two aunts who were Sisters of Mercy in Auckland, and of course there was a sort of family understanding there and a familiarity too about coming there.
Mm-hmm. And the Sisters of Mercy, you mentioned you have had two aunts who were already Sisters of Mercy, so you knew about the Sisters of Mercy.
Well, I knew about them when of course they taught me at St. Mary's in Wellington. I'm a St. Mary's Wellington old girl, not a very great one, but nevertheless there. And in a sense, I'm heavily a Wellingtonian, but I've become an Aucklander, much to my surprise.
And the Mercy Sisters have a strong commitment to social justice. You had contacts with the government and you wrote your master thesis about capital punishment. Where does your interest in social justice come from?
Well, it's really what Mercy Education is all about. Mercy Education is all about peace and justice. Those are the fundamental principles of what Mercy Education is about. So thinking about the way in which I taught and my colleagues taught, we didn't really explicitly at first mention mercy per se, but we were very strong on the social justice and peace aspect of it. The girls were the activities that were there. Also, I think the biggest influence in my life was not the Mercy Sisters, God bless them, who taught me, but the Catholic youth movement, which was extremely, in its golden days, when I was at school and left school, Cardinal Cardine's, see, judge and act those three principles, those were the things which brought faith alive for me. Just recently, the New Zealand bishops have put out a report on Catholic education. I have some very strong thoughts about that. But one of the things that they said that they didn't think that we were doing in our schools was to capture the hearts and the minds of the young. This is the job, capture the hearts and minds of the young. And I thought to myself, I was 5 years at a Catholic college, and it certainly captured neither my mind nor my heart. What captured my mind and my heart was what happened to all of us in the formation of the Catholic youth movement and the social justice thing. See, we were the first generation ever to read the Gospels properly, you know, Scripture, and we used that as our weekly thing. You read your piece of the scripture, you reflected on it strongly, and at the meetings that we had every week, you would then think, what actions are required of me from that? Now, that's really what Mercy Education should be about too, the reflection on the gospel, the reflection on the scriptures, on what would Jesus do here?
It's a lectio divina, isn't it?
Yeah. So when we sort of overlapping, while I'm thoroughly into the mercy thing now, at the time I probably wouldn't have used that expression, because we took it for granted, the Catherine story, the story of Catherine McCauley and her emphasis on the empowerment of women. And as a principal, I would say that would be number one of my things, the empowerment of the girls. And in the empowerment of the girls, particularly looking at those that were underprivileged, who needed special assistance, who needed that kind of care, just as Catherine did.
And you said before that you had several positions. You were working in public services in a Catholic newspaper and several colleges and as vicar for education. Which was the position that you liked most, if you come from that background?
Well, I wouldn't sort of say that my 10 years in the public service were very largely administrative, so I wouldn't accept there were a lot of Catholics there. And it was a time when I was at a peak in the CYM when working there.
The CYM was the Catholic Youth Movement.
The Catholic Youth Movement, yeah. But which would I most... Well, I think, believe it or not, though I loved teaching... And I loved the girls that I taught. It was a great privilege to be part of their lives for so long. But when I became the vicar, for the whole lot. You know, I knew nothing about primary schools, and it was such a joy to be part of primary education, so colourful and so full of joy and just amazing. And we went right through to university, and in my time, what was really great was that the consortium of the diocese with the other theological colleges, there was our own Catholic the School of Theology that we had, and then St. John's, which was the Anglican Methodist one, and then the Baptist. And then eventually that morphed into a School of Theology properly recognised by the university. And so it went, you know, my whole range of experience as the vicar was a huge bonus to me, and I would say one of the most the crowning joy of my life.
That sounds great. For those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Epsom. If you miss any out of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/muffintalk or send me an email at muffintalk840@gmail.com. My visitor today is Sister Pauline Engel. Sister Pauline is a Dame Commander of the Order of the British Empire in the Queen's Birthday Honours for her services in the field of education. She has been teaching and empowering three generations of young women and has always worked according to the mercy values of faith, justice and service. She said one of her biggest influences in her life was the Catholic Youth Movement and Cardinal Cardine's see, judge and act attitude, and this brought faith alive for her. And she said this was the first way that she realized how she could capture the hearts and minds of the young. And to read the gospel and to reflect on the gospel has helped her to find the power to empower girls, especially the underprivileged. Sister Pauline, whereas Catherine McCauley was teaching girls in women's trades to make them more independent, you went one step further and you were teaching girls and young women to think themselves, to appreciate themselves and not to be afraid, even if they would like to have a position, a job in a non-typical female field. How did you manage to do this?
Well, I think that probably a lot of people thought that the graduates of Karma were pretty stroppy women. and I was probably a pretty stroppy woman myself, because those were the early days of feminism. And while we don't speak so loudly about it now, it was very important that my generation of teachers encouraged our students to think openly about their careers and their lives, and particularly we have the social justice thing. I don't know whether politically I'm going to say, well, I will say this now because it doesn't defeat me otherwise, but I think you would find amongst the non-practicing members of parliament, and very strong within all the political parties, you will find people who have had a Catholic education. They may not any longer have a connection to the institutional church, but the social justice part of what they were taught at school, and that's lasted. It really has. The whole idea of the justice and peace movement is very important to be part of their bones, really, because the instinct to act has to come out of that sort of formation. And I have noticed over the years, quite fascinated really, how many, in fact entertained me too, that so many of the people who, as I said, the institutional church thing they've kind of run away from, but they certainly haven't run away from the social justice aspects of how they were formed.
And you said about the see, judge and act. And in my last interviews also with Sister Mary Foy, we heard a lot about listening. So it's see and listening, and then judge and act. Do you agree with it?
I do. And Cardinal Tom Williams was a contemporary of mine and still a very close friend. We were products, as I said, of that Catholic Youth Movement. A huge number of people, young men, entered the priesthood, and young women in religious life. So it didn't exactly put us off. It was something which sort of, I think, made us think we were all what in those days they would call late vocations. I was 29 when I entered the convent. And I think that the idea of giving your life to God made so much sense when you realised what a difference that could make if your commitment was to the whole, what we've now think, the whole mercy understanding.
I see that this Catholic Youth Movement was your instigator. And can you tell me a little bit more about it? Was it a New Zealand-wide movement?
Oh, no. This started in Canada. And it was the young Christian workers was the overseas one. We called it the Catholic Youth Movement in New Zealand, but YCW would be the international term. And so we were part of an international movement. as well.
So it started in different parts in New Zealand?
It started in Canada, as far as I know. Oh, yeah. Cardinal Delaghi, Bishop Delaghi then, he was the person who really brought it to New Zealand because he was in charge of the very visionary, charismatic man in terms of youth back there in the 50s, 60s, and into the 70s. So that came to New Zealand, you know, through him. Hmm.
Did you have the first contact through your school? Because you were at a Catholic school, or was it after your school time?
Oh, after my school time. I know, it was a parish-based thing. It was not a school thing.
So you, when you became then, when you started to teach at school and you were thinking of see, judge and act and of empowering girls and you had this background of the Mercy School, did you have a lot of resistance when you were working and empowering the girls?
No, not at all. Quite the contrary. I was very fortunate that the principal of our school, well, she had some very strict ideas about what young women should wear and how they should behave, was extraordinarily open-minded about the curriculum things that we would have had in religious education. So we could be quite experimental with the speakers that we had, with the topics that we had. In those days, there was no such thing as a proper curriculum. Every school probably was doing its own thing. And not quite, but closely. And so we were able to spend a lot of time bringing in very fine, inspirational people and then working on those and talking about them and where they fitted into our lives, yeah.
And did you get the other teachers on board?
Yes, they were always on board. They were great, yes.
And you've been teaching for so many generations. We said three generations. So you taught mothers and grandmothers.
They are grandmothers now, yes.
Do you still have some contact with former students?
Oh, hugely. I'm very, very privileged. I live at Carmel with my community.
In Milford.
Milford. The house that we live in is the original house on the property. And of course, many of the old girls have their daughters and granddaughters at the college, and we are situated right in the middle of the college. The principals of the college have been wonderfully inclusive of the sisters, and so I see a great deal of many, many girls that I taught, and it's again a wonderful privilege to look at them and know that you've been part of their lives and in their hard times, and many of them have had hard times. And when we had our Jubilee, that's our 50 years, our first 50 years, that's how young we were, back in 2007, I was amazed, I suppose, at the number of girls who were on their own, young women. And I realised that we fitted, no matter what you talk about Catholic colleges, we fitted the New Zealand statistic of just one in three marriages holding together. And I think some of these women were hugely courageous. They were. And with their daughters, I hope that courage still exists. Yes, I'm very fortunate that I have so much contact with so many of those young women.
So you could contribute in empowering them.
Well, I wouldn't kid myself, they're empowering me now, you know.
Do they come and visit you every now and then?
Yes, and I'm very, very fortunate.
Because you cannot drive anymore and you...
No. At 84, and no sight and no drive.
But they come and talk to you or read for you or...
Oh, yes. Yes, some of the people who are very strongly... supportive of me are people that I have taught with.
Yes.
And people who would share all our ideals of what a Mercy education is all about. Mm. We would hope that a graduate from a Mercy school would be somebody who is really a product of the whole person education within, you know, the person of Christ, and that compassion and service and
what makes a Catholic college a true mercy college in your opinion? What are the ingredients, as you said, the passion, the peace and justice?
And the core mercy values, you know, of, I'm going to forget them now having said that, of service and compassion, as I said, the dignity of every person, that sort of thing. So treating one another with great dignity, what I notice is the care that the girls have on the whole, the girls have great care for one another in times of stress, etc. They really do. I'm not saying that they can't indulge in, like everybody, some pretty naughty stuff that goes on. But for the most part, if somebody's in trouble, they are there for them. They are really there for them. And that would say the same thing for the staff.
Mm. Are there any students or experiences during your school time that made you particularly proud?
Well, I'm very proud of what most of them have done. And many of them would not have been girls that I had that academically would claim that they knew much from. They'd wonderfully succeeded both in their careers and in their as mothers and as teachers themselves. You know, you had lawyers and doctors and engineers, amongst a whole lot of them. And we've got one QC. Mm-hmm. I suppose there's no one individual thing. Mm-hmm. I think, as I said, when people are in difficulty, that they are there. But more particularly, I suppose, is the fact that they have a sense of responsibility to those who aren't as privileged as they are. You know, I mean, I know that there's always, you know, the collections and the programs for sending on to people at the mission or some particularly difficult situation. I think that they have a sense of responsibility, particularly if they are really well off themselves. They know this. Mm-hmm. They know that they have a duty to share that with others.
Mm. And when you were teaching at Mosgiel, so you were teaching seminarians who today are priests, and many of these priests might be on school boards. Do you think that you could also contribute in this way, that you gave them some tools for their work in the parishes and on the school boards?
Oh, I'd have to say absolutely no. But I did as a vicar. No, I didn't. I just had the 1 year down there, which I was also learning with the senior students, studying with them. The answer is no, but the diocese has excellent managers, school managers, and yearly they would have forums for helping people to be really good board members. And then the Mercy Sisters particularly, everybody on any one of our boards, whether it's a school board or whether it's an enterprise board for one of our aged care facilities or whatever, they have initiation and, you know, they're inducted with the story over and over again, so that everybody is part of the Mercy story. Everybody knows what Catherine McCauley really set up in her religious life, so that we're all, to use that dreadful expression, all reading from the same song sheet. But there is a huge amount of work goes on in educating our board members about the mission of the Sisters of Mercy, the mission of Catherine. Hmm.
And you said earlier that you really appreciated your work as Vicar of Education in the diocese, and also you were the first woman on that position.
Hmm.
Was that difficult as a first woman?
No, not at all. No, oh, I was too tough for that, no. I don't think so, she says. I'm fairly sure that they were more scared of me than I was of them.
Why were they scared of you?
Oh, well, you know, when you get to be principals, you get to the stage where you expect people to do what they're told.
And you had the position for almost 10 years.
Yes, but it was wonderful because I had my boss. I started out with Bishop Dennis, who was wonderfully kind of even asking me, inviting me to be there. And he was only there for that year before he went to the Waikato. And so most of my time I worked with Bishop Pat, and you couldn't have a better boss, really. He was absolutely marvellous to work for. Some people would say that you thought he was great, Pauline, because, you know, he just let you do what you liked. And and so maybe that's true, but he was a great boss, very, very encouraging and supportive. And yeah, even he didn't believe in what you did, he let you do it.
And as a vicar of education, you had like the overview of all the schools and the diocese.
We
Catholic
did,
diocese.
Yes, but remember what I said about the managers? We had wonderful managers, and manager of schools, Neil Lawrenson, has been there a very long time, and all the religious education advisors, people like that, superb, and some wonderful, wonderful principals. They are just amazing. They're not just administratively superb. They are people. So many of them are people of enormous faith and goodness, and they are role models for me, let alone, you know, for others. So we're very lucky with the principals that are attracted to teaching in Catholic schools. So I think we are.
I'm sure you also brought in your personal manner the justice and peace concerns into all Catholic schools and dioceses.
We did. We were strong about that. Yes, that's true. Because justice is one of the most important of any of the virtues there, and it makes a very big difference, I think. The other thing, I suppose, too, is the disadvantage and the poor. You know, to look at that. A little anecdote that I'll tell you about is that we have, in our parish, or in the parish, the area, I should say, a DePaul House, which is set up to take the homeless and people who are sort of having difficulty with their lives. And the Vincentian sisters, who ran it to begin with, used to be amazing women of great faith, but also very, very skilled at handling all these very difficult pastoral situations. And on one occasion, when a couple came down with their daughter to be enrolled, I was very early in my career as a principal, and I said to them, "Oh, don't worry about fees, da da da," you know. And afterwards, Sister Margaret said to me, not when the parents were there, she said to me, "Don't ever do that again." And I said, "Oh, why?" And she said, "Because the poor need the dignity. They need the dignity of knowing they can contribute. Doesn't matter how little they contribute. So what in future you say is, just pay what you feel you can." Mm-hmm. But the dignity of God, I was amazed. And it's a lesson I've never forgotten. The dignity of being, of treating the poor as one which enables them to have the pride of being able to do what they can contribute.
Thank you. That's a really good story to end the interview. I'm thankful for this interview. It's been a pleasure and privilege for me to have you here in the studio. And this last story about the dignity of the poor, that really draws my attention again to the Social Justice Week, which we are celebrating this week in New Zealand. And social justice, I see, is a big part of your life, and I'm happy for that. And thank you very much for coming to the studio.